Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
Nyokwele mukela unkengu, Idle Red Hands. Welcome to Idle Red Hands, I'm Chris.
That was unexpected. I'm Wayne.
I'm Lau.
I was saving that one up.
I thought you were. So, you're back.
Yes, I am. I am from Zulu. Sorry, no. Yes, I'm back from America.
Yeah, you're pretty much from the very opposite of South Africa.
Right, I was thinking that. I was thinking
like the whitest, the whitest place in America, because even Minnesota has prints.
It's true.
So how was your trip? Just the highlights.
Yeah.
All right, that's it.
Wow. Saw a ton of family. Didn't really get to go out much because there were a ton of family there. So it was nice seeing them, but yeah, that's it.
Oh, you saw your friend Kurt, right?
I did, yes.
I saw that picture.
Mm, yeah, saw my friend Nick, too.
Didn't see that picture. Otherwise, Lyle would have brought it up.
I haven't put those up yet. But.
Oh, Wayne and I need to get tested for TB tomorrow.
Yeah, while you were back in the States,
the
we may have caught TB. Great.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about Japan, but they've had a... I mean, there was a celebrity who got TB, and this is the second person at work that's gotten TB.
Apparently we're just a hotbed of, I don't know, something.
I mean, when you look online, it's like, here are the list of places that have a lot of TB, so you need to be careful, and Japan's not listed. I really need to write these medical websites saying, please put Japan on. But the guy who got it was, I don't know, he's an aversion to water or something. He just never has a shower.
Right.
So they talk about the conditions, you know, like after like the invention of indoor plumbing and running water, that pretty much licked TB for like places like Europe. But this guy seems to stubbornly refuse to use the running water that we have.
Yeah.
And he got TB. Go figure.
Hmm. Yeah. This is the guy we call Stinky because you can track him by scent around the office. And when you come in the morning, because I'm usually the first one there, I know if he's there or not because I can smell him.
Yeah. We feel like bloodhounds in a sense, because you know where he's been.
Right.
So in a sense, it's like being a dog for a short period of time, because you're like, think he's been here.
Mm-hmm. It's not, I think he's been here. It's, I'm sure he's been here, because nothing
but
else
there's a corpse.
Or there's a corpse.
A rotting corpse somewhere.
Anyway, not to keep
anyway, that's, that was our big news for the day.
Yeah.
And, I had to send. We were informed after Wayne left work, so I had to send him a message.
Yeah, that was a pleasant dinner. I'm just like, I had to read that message like a couple times. I'm like, oh, jeez.
Hey, you might have tuberculosis.
Yep.
Well, I did. I did put I did title the message TB.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
You've been warned. Yeah. So the end of my shift was reading about TB. It's like, oh yeah, well, everybody's getting tested tomorrow. Okay, great. And the rest of my shift, reading TV. And there was one website. It was like, you know, it's actually not that contagious. People that usually contract it either live with the person or work with the person.
Oh. Great.
That's good to know.
At least you don't work next to him, like Wayne does.
Yeah, the guys.
No, I don't actually work next to him. There are two guys who.
No, there's another Stinky.
Unpleasant.
He's in the accounting. The accounting section.
Oh, okay.
And the accounting guys were actually pretty calm.
Hmm.
Just sitting there.
Well, they do. You know what? Anybody who remained working with this guy as long as they have would be used to it by now.
Yeah, they're probably actually immune to all diseases. They probably use their blood to cure AIDS or something.
They have to.
So.
Jeez.
Anyway. Well, now on to the topic proper. And as Chris hinted, it is about Zulus. So today's Warriors episode is about Zulus. For those of you who haven't listened to one of our Warriors episodes before, this is where we take a warrior group from history and we pull out elements that we think are particularly interesting and which you can use in your game either as part of the story or as part of a particular character that you have, not necessarily a warrior character.
Right.
So we decided on Zulus and everybody got kind of excited, but then we came to the quick conclusion that we didn't really know much about Zulus other than the time period around Shaka Zulu.
Yeah, or the movie in my case.
Yeah, absolutely, the movie Zulu.
I didn't even know the movie until Lyle lent it to me.
Really? Yeah. Oh man, that's a classic.
Yep, it is. There's a lot I haven't seen. And then I watch it and I'm like, this movie isn't really about the Zulus all that much. Okay.
Yeah, it was made by the Brits.
Yeah, yeah.
Wouldn't the red coats on the cover kind of give that away?
Yeah.
Or be like...
Well, yeah. Getting off topic a little bit, I thought it would be a little more about the Zulus than just, hey, those guys are the bad guys.
Yeah.
Ooh, I don't know if they portrayed them as just bad guys.
Okay,
I
mean, okay.
They showed...
Right.
The courtship ritual at the beginning.
I'd say Noble Savage was kind of the portrayal in that movie.
I guess. I think they were portrayed... Or they were given more characterization than, let's say, the Somalis were in Black Hawk Down.
I was thinking that exact same example.
Yeah.
Targets to be shot at.
Yeah. Or how about the Stormtroopers in Star Wars?
Right. And we have done a Stormtrooper episode, just not those Stormtroopers.
Mm. Right. Well, so that's where we came from. But we realized, I mean, that's the time period that we know. And that's where the Zulu warrior... that we think of, that's what the time period that they come from. So that's what we're focusing on, is the time period around Shaka Zulu.
So to give a quick rundown of the Zulu, the first topic we have is called AmaZulu, which translates to the people of heaven, Zulu meaning heaven and Ama meaning people. That's what the Zulu call themselves. So basically they were a rough conglomeration of different tribes in South Africa along the Indian Ocean, the coast. And yeah, they kind of warred against each other and fought for quite a while, and it intensified when the Europeans started doing colonies and trading in Africa. And eventually this guy Shaka Zulu came, and he was kind of like the Genghis Khan or the Marius. What was the guy's name, full name for Marius?
Oh, Gaius Marius.
Gaius Marius, thank you.
And we should say, I think his name is Shaka.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, Shaka. Yeah, sorry.
He should be like Lyle Canada, Chris America.
Did he take the name Zulu on as part, kind of because he represented the people? But I suppose in his early life he wouldn't have. Hey.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. But anyway, yes, his name was Shaka, and as the Europeans brought in more trade, the rivalries and fighting intensified between the different Zulu tribes and family groups, and eventually he united all of the tribes together through a fairly bloody campaign, and formed the Zulu Empire.
Right. Yeah, he was exiled at first, and raised in a different tribe, and then came back and took over. And then when the chief of the tribe that raised him had died, he assimilated that into the what would become the Zulu Empire, or Zulu Kingdom.
Yeah, we've heard that story before, eh? Where they get banned and then come back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, jumping ahead in history a little bit, but after Shaka died, one of his half-brothers became king and then killed a bunch of other half-brothers, probably to avoid that exact same thing, which didn't work because the one he left alive because he deemed was too weak teamed up, I believe, with the British later on and then came back and killed him. So...
Let that be a lesson to everyone out there. Don't leave any survivors.
Exactly. But,
I mean, we saw that in Japanese history, where they killed everybody except for, like, an old man and two boys.
Right.
And then they grew up to kill them. And just, like, no mercy is really the lesson in history.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, don't let the, you know, don't send that person into exile. Kill them.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't kill all your half-brothers except for one. Kill them all.
Kill them all.
Exactly.
I like how that started. Don't kill all your half-brothers and leave one alive. Kill them all.
There was a lesson here.
Yeah, I think we have a tagline for this episode.
Yeah.
Shaka Zulu, kill them all.
No, it's like, kill all your brothers. Right, brothers, yeah. But anyway, doing the research for this episode, we found out like Shaka Zulu introduced a lot of reforms that then gave rise to what would be the Zulu Kingdom or Zulu Empire. And a lot of the reforms that he put in place reminded me of what Genghis Khan did for when we did our Mongols episode.
Yeah.
And that brings us to our first element, which is Imbotho or Amabutho, which is the regiment system of the Zulus. Yeah.
When we do the elements, we always try to use the native tongue.
Which is going to be tricky in this one.
Yeah. So we're trying to learn how to say the clicks. I think the one thing that really stood out for us and that we really liked about the regiment system was the age grade groupings.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we were drawing a lot of parallels with other types of systems. You could look at like Sparta, or you can look at like the knights with the squires. But young boys would come in and they serve in the regiments.
Hmm.
And then, well, not necessarily serve in the regiment, but they would like carry stuff. And it wasn't until the 20th birthday that they would actually formally join.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Join them. But there was certainly that idea, like, you know, they foster the young boys.
Prior to kind of Shaka making these reforms, as you said, the young men kind of provided service to the local chiefs until they were married, and that solidified the local tribe as a unit. But what Shaka did is he kind of, not really usurped that, but he changed it where the service that these young men provided went to himself rather than the local chiefs.
Yeah, I think he kind of took the same system, as you mentioned, that Genghis Khan did, where he broke up these the family groupings and the local groupings and set it based on age so that the people would join and they wouldn't know each other. So they wouldn't have, kind of breaking the ties to their original groups and resetting it to the king.
Right.
To himself. Right. But also, I think, you mentioned marriage as well. That was a part that I thought was pretty interesting in that marriage was a reward for a proven warrior. You weren't allowed to get married under Shaka's system until you'd proven yourself as a warrior. And I think, the number I read was that, it wasn't until about age 35. So, it was a big piece of their motivation was to be a warrior so that you could get married.
I could see that. You know, it's kind of like, you know, some systems where you only get to vote if you have performed military service. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then that can be a motivator to have people to join up, or it ensures that the people who are voting know what war is like and know what they're voting for, at least service. Mm-hmm. Not saying that's what Shaka mm-hmm. did, but in this case it was, I get the sense it was much more of a reward where be part of this system, follow along with what I'm saying, and
or die,
and you will get this reward.
Yeah.
I don't think it was an incentive. It was just.
Oh yeah. Certainly not.
Like they had to join, and they were denied things until they joined,
right.
until they completed their service. And like you guys are saying about breaking up the regional groups or the traditional tribal groups, they then divided them by how old you were.
Mm-hmm.
So you would have older regiments and younger regiments, which, yeah, I mean, we see a little bit of that with the Roman legionnaires, where they would put the more experienced guys in the back and the younger guys in the front. So other people or other groups have used the system and tried to take advantage of that, but it's certainly different from our own, I guess, the modern concept where you keep older guys embedded
right.
or older soldiers embedded into the regiment. Mm-hmm. To train the younger guys. But mm-hmm. yeah, there's certainly, like, yeah, the more reckless regiments or the regiments that can run faster or longer.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have the more experienced, the more cunning regiments.
I didn't see this come up during my research, but if you broke the warriors into these age grades, and as you said, Lyle, they were kind of separated, which kind of goes against what we would do. It seems like there would also be some incentive to prove yourself, you know, because why does that older group always get to do whatever, or why do they always, you know, get to hold back, or why do they always get to do certain things? So not saying that there was competition between them, but I could see competition between older and younger units kind of being healthy, for lack of a better term, or another motivator.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, although it's the ultimate seniority system is that you don't go into the older regiment until you are older.
Right.
But I mean, you see that rivalry with the Spartans. Do you know the movie We Were Soldiers once? It comes from the book?
No.
Sorry, not familiar.
Okay. That's a book about Vietnam and a movie about Vietnam. It actually comes from a Spartan song that they would sing to each other, like the different age groups would sing to each other. So, and it was, there's like a taunting aspect to it, which could be incorporated in, and I mean, if the movie Zulu taught us anything, and Paul Simon's records, Zulu people love to sing. So.
Why is that not an element in our Warriors episode?
but just that idea is like certain cultures, they do have the taunting. Well, I think maybe the Scots had some form of rap battle way back when.
Yo, what a Highlanders.
Yeah. No, I'm serious.
The Maoris are probably the most famous one I could think of.
Something about prose.
Hmm.
I'm sure we could find that in other cultures. But, I mean, you can incorporate that into yours if you do have like that internal rivalry based on something very concrete like age. And they can have, like Wayne said, they're trying to one-up each other, both on the battlefield and off the battlefield. Maybe drinking is it, but or it could be a song. It could be not pranks. I mean, that kind of demeans it, but
right.
doing things like that to each other.
Right. I don't know. Like Chris mentioned the Maori, but like in that one, they're kind of singing to the enemies for intimidation. Whereas this one, I was thinking more of, you know, like rivalry between the regiments, as you were saying, Lyle. But on the other end, it kind of defeats the purpose because, as you said, the older regiment is older because they themselves are older. So sing all you want, you're not going to get in. You know, it's you're not going to be part of this because you're just not old enough yet.
You know, and I'm probably contradicting myself, but it becomes a thing not so much in order to like rise and get transferred to another regiment, but the young guys work together to increase the status of the young regiments.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So they become. I mean, if we look at, like, I'm not so sure that the Zulus had this concept where the vanguard necessarily was the pride of place, like the samurai did, or perhaps like more traditional European knights did. But you could do that. If whatever is that key regiment, then they're like, we'll give it to the young guys. They've earned it. Look what they've done.
Right.
So it's not like the individual rises beyond the regiment, but the individual helps the entire regiment to rise. So in a way, it's a way for to increase group harmony, but also have some fun disharmony, which is always fun to play with.
Right. Up to a certain point.
Well, if you look at a party and you're all, let's say you make them all the same age, so they're all part of this regiment, and they're going to work really hard together to increase, you know, the group status, but then they also have, you know, rivalry within the entire army with the other regiments.
Mm-hmm.
So that can lead to some intrigue off the battlefield. Yeah.
Yeah. We've talked before about, you know, figuring out why the player characters are a group, and in this one it's, you're the same age. Which means you're going to be in the same regiment together.
Yep.
And you're going to be sticking together because you're the same age. You're aging at the same speed. So,
you know, no, that's an excellent point. And I think a lot of people make their characters roughly about the same age.
Mm.
I think people are reluctant to play older characters, but you can almost encourage people to play an older character. Well, if you want to play this level or with this amount of points to build your character, you got to play this age.
Right.
Which can be in keeping, if you're playing a more traditional fantasy game, can be in keeping in with the wizard characters, that they're older because they have to spend all this time researching. But, like, you have an older fighter. Like, people would be reluctant to play an older fighter.
Well, I mean, some systems, you know, you have actually lost points.
That's ageism. You know. That's what it is.
Yep, exactly.
But, I mean, the age grades makes a lot of sense because you're grouping people by the rough physical abilities.
Hmm.
As well as a rough experience, of course.
Right.
But you can also take other things to, like physical things or not very internal things, but external things to differentiate people and then put them to groups. I mean, it could be, I think Napoleon took a lot of, his guard consisted of a very, very tall soldiers. So it could be something like that, where you divide people by height or body type or
geographic location where they were born.
Yeah, if you wanted to then encourage those kind of regional ties, which would be the opposite of Shaka, who was like, no, split them up, or the opposite of Genghis Khan.
Right.
Yeah, I actually kind of like that whole splitting up thing. We talked about it when we did the Mongols as well, but it kind of forces everyone in the group to have a different kind of varied backstory, and it kind of forces the players to create their own ties amongst each other instead of kind of relying on a background to do it. Not to suggest that, you know, having tied backgrounds is a bad thing by any means, but yeah, it could just create some variation.
Well, you know, I may be joining a Rifts game, and the person or the game master said, you know, you can make whatever you want, but everybody has to have this in common.
Hmm.
And it has to be from this region.
Atlantis?
No, it's where Ukraine used to be.
Oh.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's good when a game master does that. It's like, okay, I want you all to, like, have something in common. Here's what it is.
Right.
You're all the same age, and it's the culture where, you know, if you're all the same age, you're like, hey, why are we all together? Hey, you're all the same age, because it's an age grade culture. Now, with this regiment system, I mean, a lot comes with it. Of course, not only just organization by age, but also just the idea of la lela. Which is like obey or obedience, but we couldn't find the word for obedience.
So we used obey, yeah. So what, the early Zulu Empire had Andre the Giant sticker slapped everywhere with Lalela on it?
Did he used to say obey?
No, but for some reason there's some kind of street artist. And you haven't seen those? These stickers with kind of a stylized Honor the Giant face with obey under it? No? Okay.
No, not at all. All I remember from Honor the Giant was like, Hogan, I'm going to squeeze, Hogan.
Anybody want a peanut?
Yeah, that's what I remember. Huh. All right. Maybe it was only... I swear I've seen those stickers here, but... Okay.
Of course, every military culture has the idea of obedience, but Shaka seemed to take it to the next level.
Yeah, hey?
And, I mean, you hear stories, and you don't know how many of them are true, but one story is that he ordered at least one regiment to just march off a cliff.
Hmm.
And the reason for it was just to prove their obedience.
I imagine he had them do that well after he was established.
Well, yep, maybe that's one of the things he did to establish himself.
Sure, he killed a lot of people to establish himself, but I don't think it was, okay, go kill yourself by walking off that cliff.
I think what Chris is saying is that maybe, I mean, he uses that as an intimidation tactic.
And that would make me think he's pretty powerful.
Yeah, where his troops are going to follow him unto death.
Right.
But who knows, yeah.
I mean, we hear about that with the samurai, and their almost blind obedience to the daimyo because they had like seppuku. But I think a lot of that was more honor.
Right.
And there's certainly a lot of stories of betrayal.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the most famous battle in Japanese medieval history, Tokugawa won because he got certain daimyo to betray their lord.
Mm.
But this is just obedience. Not necessarily honor. Like, they are just going to... I mean, he's the boss. He's the man.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't follow his rules, then he kills you.
Yeah.
They had this thing called the... let me see if I can pronounce this right. The Kankuarta, which is translates roughly to the execution field. And it was an area outside every camp where they would take people who were disobedient and they would club them to death. And they said that the place was always circled by vultures constantly.
Hmm.
Pretty harsh reality.
Well, you know... Well, you've said that, but it, in a sense, it undermines what we're saying about obedience.
Right.
Because here if you they were disobeying, yeah. they need to club them to death. It's like the Romans, I mean, the decimation system, but that was more for failure.
Mm-hmm.
But here you're saying they disobeyed, so they would club them to death. But I guess the myth we're trying to propagate here is that they just wouldn't disobey.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess not.
Well, you know, Heaven, like, I think one of the reforms that Shaka put in was getting rid of sandals. He made his warriors all fight and run on bare feet. And people who questioned this, who didn't want to get rid of their sandals, a lot of them were killed. And I think, you know, maybe Wayne put it up before, this is while he was gaining power to say, no, sorry, you can't disobey me, to prove it to people.
Well, I think by a lot of the ones that objected were killed. You really mean to say all the ones that objected
right,
were
right.
killed.
I almost chimed in with that too, yeah. Right, probably all the ones he could catch.
Exactly. Or exiled too, was on the other.
Yeah. But he actually had a reason for it. He felt that it would enable them to run faster.
Right.
Mm. Oh, yeah,
right.
Yeah. And he was right too.
Yeah. Now that I think about it, sandals do slow you down.
Mm-hmm. I imagine all the guys, okay, strip off all your sandals. We're not wearing them anymore. Oh, what? Come on. Really? Can I keep my sandals?
Ow.
Nope. All right. Better get running. Here we come. You know, as the guy's being cut down. You are right. We could have run faster without sandals. Yeah, what Chris and you guys said, certainly at the beginning, I think killing everybody who disobeys you does send a very bloody but very strong message of you're going to obey or you're going to die.
Yeah. I think a lot of the things that I saw about the Zulu warriors, one of their strongest assets was their morale. And a big part of that was their almost unquestioning obedience to their commanders. And, you know, I think that's a big part of it. You drill this into them. Because when Shaka was gaining power, he probably had to do it to a lot more people. But there's always going to be troublemakers, especially when you're drafting every single person in every tribe, or every single male in every tribe of a certain age. So, you know, there always are going to be some people that you have to make an example of. And when you've made those examples, then the remaining people are the ones who follow orders.
Right.
Which is something that, to consider if you're making a character for this, is that if you're somebody who kind of questions authority or goes against orders, how have you survived this long?
Yeah, that's a good point. There wasn't much of a debating society in Shaka's time.
No. It was called a machete.
For sure not.
And by drilled it into it, he actually used the drill.
Right.
No, I was thinking that myself. Is like, yeah, if you have a blind obedience, but is there a blind obedience? Obviously, I mean, you mentioned that there's the killing fields where that's what, you know, they took people that did disobey. So how do you have a rebel? And I mean, this is a perfect society of the overpowering overlord.
Right.
And that can both encourage obedience, but certainly can encourage dissent. Although we don't see a lot of that while he was alive.
Mm-hmm. Though, you know, even though in Warriors episodes we focus on playing as the Warriors, that kind of, you know, loyalty and obedience, they could make for some pretty foreboding bad guys.
Or incredibly boring. Because you just know, oh, great, these guys are going to fight to the death because for them to disobey, they're going to get killed anyway.
Yeah, you can't negotiate with them. You can't reason with them. They're coming.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't say you couldn't reason with them, or you couldn't, you know, do stuff with them. It just would take a lot more, you know, than you would think.
I don't know if that makes it any different than the way a lot of people play the games anyway.
True.
That's true. Yeah,
I think you two actually touched on it in the alignments episode. We're talking about. Not racism, but kind of the idea of a racial alignment, and people just see, okay, all orcs are this alignment.
Right.
Why is that? But then, really, is that how you have to play them? And that means you can't deal with orcs on an individual level?
Mm-hmm.
So, I think, whether or not it's interesting, I'm not sure, but having that obedience, it certainly poses a challenge in how to have an exciting game, because... Yeah, how do you get somebody to turn against each other if they do have that obedience?
Right.
Certainly, if you want to have an excuse of maybe, because people maybe can easily make the jump when they're thinking about another race, and I don't mean another race as another ethnicity, I mean like orc, dwarf,
elf. Right. Mm-hmm.
But just the waves upon waves, and they're just not going to stop, and we're gunning them all down, but they just won't stop. You know, the Zerg and...
StarCraft,
thanks. Or the Tyranids. And the hive mind, and people can do that, but why are the humans doing it? Like I'm human, they're human, or I'm Eldar, they're Eldar, I'm Elf, they're Elf, but why do they just keep coming? Mm-hmm. There's no stopping them, you know, that can get kind of scary. It's not a zombie game, but it's almost like a zombie game.
Right.
They're smarter than zombies, you know,
they have spears.
I mean, if you have fear, if you have intimidation, immediately those become more difficult to use because they don't stop. Because right. There's something scarier than anything that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it isn't even a fear thing. They can't get married until, what, they're 35 or something like that. So they've had, like, say, 10, 15 years of just this, or 35 years of this mind-numbing fear and obedience. And, you know, that's ingrained into them. You can't break them.
Mm.
Yeah. Or you talk about, to borrow again from Warhammer and Games Workshop, the Slayers. And they're fearless. Or we think about the Berserker cult, you know, and right. With the Vikings, they're fearless. And you think, well, it's the drugs, but it could be something else. It's just the way the culture is set up is just this person can know no fear. It's impossible. Or they know fear, but obedience will always win out.
Right. They know fear, and what's behind them is scarier than what's in front of them.
Yeah.
And if you do, to take it off the battlefield, you can't bribe them. And if they're used to... kill somebody who disagrees, then they might do that. So
they'll kill somebody for wearing sandals. So imagine what they do for an argument.
I mean, we always go to Star Wars, but I mean, think about that as the stormtroopers, known for being very obedient, and you can't turn them or bribe them or anything. We never really see that in the movie because we don't see them do anything, and they get
other than
by
miss.
The Jedi.
Yeah,
but it was just like if somebody's like, oh, we don't need to see his identification, when the other stormtrooper just like shoots him in the head. He's returned and then shoots the other guys. And it's just like,
yeah, that would be pretty funny.
We were told to check everybody's identification. Yeah. Obviously, he's disobeyed. It would have been a short movie, admittedly.
Right. Well, there were only two or three stormtroopers in that one little scene. So as soon as they all killed each other,
no, I mean they killed the one guy. He's like, we don't need to see their identification.
Yeah, I was implying that Ben Kenobi goes, you know, mind controls one of them. His buddies shoot him, so he mind controls another one. Everybody shoots that guy, and it's just like a chain of discommand until there's one guy left.
Or, no, I was thinking that they shoot Ben Kenobi and Luke.
Well, okay, yeah.
Because think about it. We're here to look for two droids. They've got droids. The guy just acted strange. Bam. He's gone. See you, old man. Bam. He just repeated what the old man said. Bam. Bam.
Of course, they would all miss because they're all stormtroopers. But
these are not as random as a storm or a Jabba blaster.
Like. Yeah.
Oh, you mean they're even more random?
Jawas actually like to spin their weapons when they shoot. or sand people, which actually were in the Zulu area as well.
Yeah. Yes, they were. We discovered that the Bushmen are actually called the sand people, not sand, but sand people.
Oh, S-A-N.
Oh, is it sand? Oh, see, I heard it out of a documentary that I watched, and I actually thought that it was S-A-N-D, sand people.
S-A-N.
S-A-N, sand people.
And here I was going to go,
thank God, but you still managed to.
What was that? It's like the Bushmen. You know, that's a little bit demeaning. Can we call you sand people? Or, no. How about Jawa? How's that? And we talk about the sandals, and that leads into our third element, and that is Umzimba, which means body. And Chris, you really like this part of the Zulu story.
Yeah, well, it reminded me a bit of when we talked about the Apache warriors as well. A lot of the physical training that they went through and the hardships that they did to become the warriors. Some examples were that they started as young as age 5 and 6, carrying weapons and materials for the camps of warriors. And things that were too heavy to carry for a 6-year-old. They trained by doing marches of up to 50 miles a day at Shaka's whim. And after he got rid of all the sandals, in order to toughen up their feet, he would have them stomp as hard as they could on thorn bushes and then kill them if they didn't. So, yeah, they were pretty hard, fierce warriors because they had a nasty training regime.
Yeah, the body toughening. We hear about that when we think of monks. Mm-hmm. One of the things I think the Japanese monks do is they sit under the cold waterfall.
Mm-hmm.
But for other warrior cultures, we don't hear about that so much. Certainly do the physical training to increase their endurance or to strengthen their body. But this in a sense is like hardening their body, mm-hmm. like hardening their feet. That was pretty interesting to do that. It was like a next level.
Hmm. Well, it kind of reminds me of Marines or Navy SEALs training where you're going through all this rigorous training. Not that I've done it, because I would break like a twig. But, you know, to build yourself up and to kind of build up that endurance and that hardness and that kind of, even kind of like a mental attitude through, you know, all kinds of physical and mental trials, usually at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
No, absolutely. Not to demean the training of those groups. And they certainly do like the psychological training where they try to break them and try to get information out of them in the training, or like police officers will take the young officers to the morgue,
right? Mm-hmm.
So they get used to seeing dead bodies. But I mean, just the idea of like toughening your skin was on top of that. Where it'd be like you took your Marine and you're like, okay, you've done your 50-mile march. Now I'm gonna like hit you with these thorns just to toughen up this part of your body,
right? Mm-hmm. No, so you did your 50-mile march. Now do it again with no shoes.
Yeah, but they're like, but we invented rubber.
Yeah.
We have leather, rubber.
Yep.
We can go just as fast now.
That's, again, taking it into the game world. Yeah, a lot of settings do have all this, not technological stuff, but, you know, you've got armor and shields and whatnot in traditional fantasy games, and you've got all kinds of fancy stuff in science fiction. So taking this idea to a character, in a game, a character would say, and I'm not going to wear that, at least for training, because there's going to be times when I'm not going to be able to use it. And I want to be physically tough and, you know, I want my body to be hard enough to withstand, maybe not laser bolts if you're in, you know, a sci-fi setting, but, you know, I don't want to rely only on my equipment. I want to rely on my body to protect me as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, ain't no thorny trees in the world going to help you protect you against the laser bolt.
I know. All right. I wasn't thinking of, you know.
Good thing I shot myself with lasers in preparation for this.
Exactly. Well, now I'm thinking of that scene from Princess Bride with the Iocane powder where you build up a tolerance and it's like, I'm going to shoot myself with this laser pistol. All right. You know, nope.
But, I have a tolerance to bullets.
Yeah.
Now just put a little bit of gunpowder in that cartridge. shoot your head. Go,
Slowly build up to a full cartridge.
Is it gonna toughen up my bones? Actually, probably weaken.
In one specific place, drastically. But
and they'll probably notice because you're gonna have like a scar
slash hole.
All right, so that's ideas out the window. All right.
No, but I mean, you think about it, and people, the modern military does this, is toughen them up psychologically, where they're creating a callus, if you will,
on the mind.
Over their psyche. Mm-hmm. So that aspect can be used for a lot of things. I mean, if you have magic, it could be some sort of magical defense that you have, like wizards or mages that come from this particular school. Mm. One of the things that they have is they're particularly tough. They have particularly tough defenses. You certainly see that with some psionic groups or some stories with psionics, where somebody will have very good mental defenses.
Mm-hmm.
Like no one can break them.
Mm-hmm. Jeez, the first example coming to mind is Twilight. No, get it out.
Jeez, don't need to know more about that.
Or even like if you have a spy school, they toughen them up psychologically, or toughen up their skills by making it so they can't trust anybody.
Mm.
Or they're unusually suspicious. So they beat out, if you will, their gullibility.
Mm. I'm now thinking of the X-Men's Danger Room, although that was just kind of training up your power. Wasn't really beating anything into you, but...
Yep. Superheroes, I think, the sky's the limit what you could do with that. I don't know if people would enjoy playing the training.
I don't think they would, no.
But, you know, if you're going to... I mean, certainly the training can bring the group together. When we talk about before, is, hey, how do you get a group together? Their training brought them together.
Right.
It reminds me of the miniseries Band of Brothers.
Okay.
Where they, in the first episode, they really hate that one training officer.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the other officers says, yeah, but they'll like, you know, march. They'll go on a 20-mile march just to piss in his coffee.
Mm.
And it's brought them together because of the training. They hate the training so much, it brings the group together.
Right.
So that kind of backstory, that common backstory can really help them. They all get a benefit out of it. They get something that they're tougher at.
Right. Some kind of skills or you know, constitution bump or...
Yeah. But there's none of this, oh, I'm going to betray him now. And it's like, no, you went through the training. I mean, that forms this bond. And you've done some combat, so that forms this bond. So no, like, stealing his money behind his back.
Mm-hmm. No, I was thinking pretty much the same thing, where you wouldn't want to play the training. It would be more in the backstory to why you're together. And as you just said, Lyle, like, okay... You are, yeah, not going to betray or steal or mess with each other because of what you went through.
Yeah, it's also a good way to introduce NPCs as they come from the training.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And, there could be that trust there, like we've been through the same thing. And you can do that beyond other things beyond training. You'd say they went to the same battle together. But it could be, he says he can do this. Or she says she can do that. Like, she says her skin is as tough as iron. And you're like, mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, coming from our training, it should be like me. Yeah. All of us have that.
Hmm. Now I'm thinking of kung fu stuff.
Yeah, yeah. He comes from this school. Yeah, he can do that.
Yes, he can. How do you know? Because I'm from that school too, and I can do it. And now I'm going to show you.
And other things that can come from a particular school or particular training, of course, is the strategy. And we like to... We've called this element the Mimpondo Zemkomo, which means buffalo horns. Which is perhaps the most famous strategy that they used.
Slash only.
Hey, it's famous for a reason.
Yeah. When it comes down to a lot of the things about the Zulu warriors impressed me, but this is where I actually criticize them a bit. But I'll look at that later on. So basically the Mpondo Zenkomo is it's where the army lays itself out in the shape of a buffalo, where they have a block of troops that act as the head, and on each side they have a flanking arm that kind of is shaped like the horns of a buffalo. And then following behind that, they have the chest and the loins. And those are kind of a second line and reserve units.
Right.
That they use.
I thought the chest was made up of the kind of the warriors that were in their prime, kind of like the main force, where the loins or the reserves were older veterans.
Correct, yes. And the youngest people formed the horns because theoretically they could run the fastest.
Right.
Yep. Yep.
Because the point is that the horns encircled the enemy while the main force or chest just hit them.
Exactly, yeah. And then the horns closed in afterwards. So when the enemy's force was brought to bear against the chest or the head, then the horns would encircle and attack them from the rear.
Right.
And, you know, it's a great tactic. I actually used this tactic back when I played Warhammer 40,000 for my Eldar, and it worked to great effect.
Because that's absolutely real life.
Yeah, I was going to say, I use this in my, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, tactical simulation game, and that tactic works very well.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's certainly not unique to the Zulus' encirclement. Even as far, you know, World War II, I mean, the Germans won amazing battles encircling the Soviets.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Soviets came back and encircled them. obviously, when it's more modern, it's more elaborate. But, yeah, just the idea of encirclement was pretty effective. I guess your criticism, Chris, is that they never deviated from it.
Exactly, yes.
Hey, why change what works?
Yeah. And I think that was their idea. You know, this has won us hundreds of battles, and but now it stopped. Let's keep going with it, though. See what happens.
Well, that's the obedience in action there.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, well, come on. Plus, if you won, like, hundreds of battles using this one, you're like, wow, that one battle, that must have been a fluke. Let's try again.
No, but that's the thing, though, is, you know, if they'd have analyzed the reasons that they lost, they would have been able to compensate with different kinds of tactics, but they didn't.
Was there anybody left to analyze what went wrong?
I'm sure there were some survivors. There's some, when it went wrong was called the Blood River. It was where, the Zulu forces attacked a circled wagon train with, Gatling guns and things like that.
Mm.
And, the lines broke and the Zulus got backed against a river and just got slaughtered. But I don't think it was to a man.
Encircling horns with spears and throwing spears and stabbing spears against, I don't know, Gatling guns. I see this going poorly.
They defeated the British, who were similarly armed in some situations. I think the reason they said that it didn't work against the circle of wagons is because it was a circle.
Right.
The Zulus couldn't decide on a single point to attack, so their attack fell apart.
Or it could have also been, hey, we know what these guys are going to do, so let's set it up so it won't work.
Mm. Well, I think the Zulus, they had a really good set of tactics and really nice weapons and training that put them together, but I think the thing that really limited them, in compared to another group like the Mongols, because we were comparing to Genghis Khan earlier, is communication. I think they set up before a battle and they said, you're the head, you're the horns, and now everybody go. And it was just a charge and melee after that. So if things started to go bad, you know, the rest of the army might not realize that one of their flanks is failing or that the battle is over, but they just don't know because they're just running to attack the enemy. Which is something I suppose to look at in a game is that when you go into battle as a Zulu warrior, it's a full commitment. You're expected to fight until the enemy or you are dead.
Well, I don't know if I would say that, but I was thinking, I'm not really sure how to say this. I was thinking that, yeah, this is kind of the one tactic they're known for because it worked so often, right up until it didn't. But if you were going to take this into a game and play a Zulu-inspired or a Zulu-esque warrior culture, I tend to think you would do the same thing. Like, you would have your one or handful of tactics that have been drilled into you. And again, it's kind of, it would be a bit harder as we've talked about it in other episodes because there are so few player characters as opposed to the number of people who were actually, or the number of warriors who were actually in these engagements. So you can't exactly do, you know, the horns of the buffalo with a handful of PCs. But if you develop something that's kind of the signature tactic, why not continue to use that? Like, if that's maybe getting a bit meta here, but if that's kind of what your culture is known for, wouldn't you continue to do that? Even if it's necessarily like a detriment, again, getting maybe into like, you know, honor, which is, I'm not saying that's why the Zulus did it, but it's like, we're known for this. Therefore, doing something different kind of means I'm not that, so I'm going to stick with this, even if I know it's not the best choice.
Well, it could be. I mean, if you have an innovator, and then the innovator dies, the innovator's successors can't figure out how to adapt. Mm-hmm. All they know is what that person introduced.
Right.
Well, especially when that innovator spent so much time and effort getting rid of people who are individual thinkers.
Yeah. So it could be the downside there. I mean, sure. Yeah, certainly is the pride, but it can also be the inability to do it. But it also that point in a culture's history when they do, and we've talked about this in other episodes, especially the warfare episode, when they meet a superior technology or superior tactic, what do you do?
Yes.
And that could be, that could make for an interesting story, is do you try to steal that technology or copy the tactic? How do you convince people to do it? How do you keep what's you but incorporate what seems to be killing you, you know, or killing your people?
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting choices to kind of place a game during that time period in a culture.
Absolutely. And I think the you can see it well with the Zulu and also, for example, with the Samurai, where honor was a very important point to them. So they wanted to keep the traditional way, even if they knew that it was less effective.
Yeah, when the Meiji Restoration.
Exactly, yeah.
And everybody sides with the Samurai, but you're like,
Gatling gun, sword.
It's like with the Meiji Restoration. I mean, when you watch a movie like Last Samurai, you're like, oh, you're supposed to sympathize with the Samurai.
Yeah.
But you're also, I mean, we're very critical of the Zulus, where you're like, you can't win fighting this way.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at it, what's the point of fighting? The point of fighting is to win.
Right.
So you can no longer win with your style. Why do you continue? You know, if people rode around in chariots, should we like, well, you know, you keep getting killed. I'm surprised your people are still alive, but gosh darn it, I admire you.
But that is part of it, though, you know, that's kind of going out with a bang. You're up against impossible odds, so you can either roll over and let them conquer you, or you can, you know, go out fighting. What was it, in World War II, when the Polish, when they charged cavalry units against German tanks? You know, it was either that, or just sit there and let the tanks roll into your town.
I don't think so. I think it could have been partisans or something like that. But yeah, I'm sure there's also the idea that it's all happening now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have, you know, defeat after defeat, that can be, and you give your characters time, you know, this is the time. What are you guys going to do?
Yeah.
Are you going to help lead the change? Are you going to go out in a glorious battle? But I don't think that battle will be so glorious if you're sitting at the table rolling dice and the game master's going, and it does nothing against the power armor.
Right.
Still going to use their swords? Yeah, okay. And he shoots you and take all your hit points and damage.
Right. Take all the damage ever. Yeah.
And you're dead. Oh, it just doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's not. But I think what do you keep? What do you get rid of? That could be the interesting story.
No, that could be the interesting story. But however, if they do that, and if that's the story you tell, and they all decide your place is done, well, we're going to keep nothing. Is that when you just kind of like close the book and say, okay, good game, who's GMing next?
Well, not necessarily, because there's still a story to be told in how you adapt. I mean, how do you get a hold of these weapons? Do you have to steal them from it?
No, but that's what I mean. Like, if the players say, and we take nothing.
Oh, sorry.
We refuse to change. You're just like, all right, good game, guys.
Well,
sorry to clarify, I mean, what I mean is people go into the story knowing that this is what the story is going to be about.
Okay.
I think you would have to set it up that way, because I think the change, although we make it sound very suddenly, and certainly when like the atomic bomb is dropped,
right,
that's a pretty big game changer. But even the development of tanks, I mean, that went for like decades.
Yeah.
I mean, they appeared in World War I and then didn't do a whole lot because there was only maybe one example of mass tanks. Yeah, then, but people know it's coming, so.
Yeah, and when it comes down to it, the Zulu too, they didn't not attempt to adapt. It's just they didn't do very well at it. They got a hold of some older, rifles from, I think it was from the Portuguese, but, that they didn't have anybody to train them with them, so they treated them kind of like spears, where they would aim the bullets high so that they would get more weight behind them when they would come back down on the target. Mm. Of course, they didn't actually come back down. Or they closed their eyes when they were pulling the trigger because of the sound.
Was there no gravity in South Africa? What? The bullets do come down.
Yes.
Okay, the bullets come. I got Chris's point. The bullets come back down. It's probably not in the same place that a spear would.
Thank you, Captain Pedantic.
As a perfect seg to our final element, and that's Izikali, which is weapons.
And Zulus had some cool weapons. And more cool than their actual weapons were the names for their weapons.
Yeah, something that we liked about it was their use of onomatopoeia to name their weapons. For example, the ipapa, which was named that way because of the papa sound it made as it flew through the air. The ipapa is a spear.
Not that I've thrown a spear, but I don't know any spears that make that sound. I mean, not saying that the papa didn't make that sound, but it's kind of an odd sound for a spear to make.
Okay, what would you name the spear, Wayne?
I don't, whoosh or something?
Swoosh.
Yeah, that's what I imagine a spear would sound like when it's thrown through the air, but...
Well, if it had one of those broad-headed blades and you threw it with a spiral, it would probably make that kind of sound.
Mm. But Japanese dogs say wan-wan.
Well, it's Japanese. Let's not get started on them naming stuff.
Right, but I mean, they're onomatopoeia for what a dog says, so it's at a bow-wow or ruff-ruff.
All right.
So obviously people hear different things.
Point taken.
But the one I really like is the... Well, there's different ways to say it. The coolest way is the wa.
Yeah.
And that was named for the sucking sound it made when it was withdrawn from the human body.
Yep.
And that's the...
Stabbing spear.
The short stabbing spear that, if you watch the movie Zulu, that's what you see them use. So.
Yeah, well, one of we didn't mention it, but one of the reformations that Shaka made was to favor the stabbing spear, the ikwa, however you say it. Yeah, like I said, I don't know how to do that. The stabbing spear over the throwing spear, because as he kind of very intelligently realized, hey, if you throw your spear, you just gave the enemy a whole bunch of weapons. So let's not do that. And much like the sandals, I believe they were discouraged from throwing their spear by being killed.
Yeah, if you lost your spear. Actually, the documentary I watched, the guy used the same line out of Star Wars. This weapon is your life.
Right, because I'm sure Star Wars is the only movie that has said that.
Or the Marines, this is my rifle.
This is my gun.
Yeah.
This is my ikloa.
Yeah. This is my ipapa.
This is for fighting, this is for drawing out of wounds.
Yeah.
The other one that, if anyone has seen the movie Zulu... They have those really tall shields, and I'm probably going to murder this pronunciation, the Isihalangu. They're kind of made out of cow skin, but it was that really tall, almost like a tower shield in size. It had the stripes and the patterns on the side. I think those look really, really cool.
I read that the big ox hide spear was called Ngobo.
I think there was two versions. There was the smaller one pre-Shaka and the large one post.
Did you say the...
Do I have those backwards?
Isilangu?
The Isilangu was about like 5 feet. And the Mbombolzolo was a smaller one. So
the Shaka era was the Isilangu.
Oh, the larger one. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
So, and again, you're right. The shields were pretty cool. And the cool thing that I thought about it were the color of the shield, where the older warriors had lighter cowhide shields. So, like, younger warriors might have, like, black that kind of faded up to, like, you know, gray, like half white and black. And then the king had white. Mm-hmm. And they think it wasn't because of anything particularly special other than the fact that the higher grade soldiers took the lighter cows. So it wasn't like, we're going to make this white shield for the king. It was, nope, we're going to make the king, the shield for the king from his cows, and all his cows happen to be white.
Oh, is that the reason? Okay. I didn't read anything about it.
That's the reason I read. Huh.
The older warrior would have their shield for longer, so it would fade in the sun.
It might be that too. The thing I read is that the lighter cows were actually taken by the higher level people.
No, you're probably right because you read that, and I was just guessing about mine.
But Again, and that's something, like, we talk about heraldry or colors in other episodes, and that's something, again, to differentiate the units or something to kind of, I don't know, take away as this interesting tidbit to make your warrior characters more interesting.
Mm-hmm. But I want to take away the bleaching tidbit.
Okay, fine.
Where they would not, they don't renew what they have, or they don't paint it over. They let it fade with every battle, and they don't, like, repair it. They only repair it so it's functional.
Mm-hmm.
And that none of the function is diminished, but they don't repair how it looks. So that's how you can tell the elite by just how faded and ratty they are, but then that's kind of scary.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the scars on the body.
Right.
Yeah. But no, of course, I'm just totally making that up because, as you said, it probably is because, you know, they prized white cows, so that would go to the king.
No, but I mean, like, you take what you said and you're just like, okay, I can see guys saying, let's go fight those clean-looking guys. Why? Well, because they're obviously new.
Yeah.
Let's not go fight those ragtag, you know, hardened veterans over there because they're probably going to beat us. No.
Beware of adventurers that match.
Or when they say, you know, the guy has a scar and it's like, whoa, he looks tough. Look at the scar. And somebody goes, wow, I wouldn't want to face the guy that gave him that scar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then you're like, well, he's dead.
Yeah, I was walking through Kabukicho with a friend of mine in Tokyo, and there was this guy in front of us who was missing half of his pinky finger. So I nudged my buddy. I'm like, wow, check it out. He must be Yakuza. My friend, he's Japanese. He said, yes, but because that you can tell he's just really bad at his job.
Right. Well, in this case, all those guard shields, they would be seen as good. You know, that's kind of, it's a bit opposite of when we did Vikings, because remember, like, if the armor failed to protect its wearer, that armor was kind of cursed, mm-hmm. because it didn't do its job, and so no one would pick it up, and you wouldn't loot corpses of fallen bodies, at least for weapons and armor. This is a bit of the opposite, where it's like, nope, that's my shield, and look how banged up and, you know, damaged it is, because I've been in that many battles, and it's protected me that many times, and I'm that good.
No, but the same for the Vikings, though. They would keep armor that has protected them through many battles.
Yeah. Opposite of the Vikings would be the Greeks, who fought over the armor of mm-hmm. fallen people.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. Again, you've now earned the nickname Captain Pedantic. There you go.
How is it? As a thing, what you said, it makes sense. It's like, we didn't talk about them taking the stuff off of people. We just said, I don't know, it wasn't even true of the Zulus, but, yeah.
Yeah, we're actually even working entirely on myth here.
All right.
Though, you know, actually, that's something to mention about this whole episode is that the Zulus didn't have a writing system, so everything was oral tradition and information that was taken from the European colonizers around the area. So nobody really knows what the truth, especially of Shaka, we were talking about before. So take everything with a grain of salt and play with it as much as you like.
Which we have.
Yes.
Obviously.
Well, that ends our episode on Zulus. And the proper name for the Zulu people would be Chris?
The Amazulu.
And so the elements that we pulled out from them were Ibutho, which is the regimental system, which included age grades that we thought was very interesting. Lalela, which is obey or obedience. And then Umzimba, the body. Or the toughening of the body and ways to toughen yourself. The Pondozenkomo, buffalo horns, and Izikali, the weapons. And I think we're going to pick an English warrior group next time.
Right.
Give ourselves a break.
You know, oddly though, I think we're actually doing far better than we did on the Vikings one. That one was hard.
I don't know.
Yeah, that was pretty hard, yeah.
Strings of consonants.
Well, you know what, actually, we might have done worse than something like the Musketeers because it's French and we should actually say it better. Whereas when you're using the Zulu language, no disrespect, expectations are pretty low that we're going to be able to get the clicks down. And the Viking language, when you're looking up Icelandic and saying close enough, just, people are going to be like, well, you know, how many people from Iceland listen to us?
Actually, none now.
Didn't we get a comment about our Viking pronunciation?
I think you did.
Yeah. Or should we say our Norse pronunciation?
Well, we at least tried.
And I think that was the only positive part of that comment. Thank you, but on behalf of the Icelandic people,
don't try. Yeah, please stop. Yeah.
All right, well, thank you for joining us again on Idle Red Hands. Check us out online at www.idleredhands.com. Idleredhands.com. You can listen to the episode right there on the website, or stream it through iTunes or Stitcher, or download it off of DriveThruRPG. You can plus one us on G+, you can like us on Facebook, you can follow us on Twitter, or you can join up and talk to us in our forums. Those are at idleredhands.com/forums, and are hosted by Happy Jacks. Thank you very much, guys. Or you can send us an email at info@idleredhands.com. Thanks a lot, and see you next time.
All right, bye.
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 Ngabunga.
What a show off.
Welcome to the House of Doors. Sorry.
Drive-through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week, and we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-Thru RPG, the one true source for RPGs.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.